Who is making the sound?
Good morning and welcome. It's Saturday, means it's time for books, writing and literary culture. You're tuned into 2SER 107.3 and this is Final Draft. My name is Andrew Popel and every week it is my absolute pleasure to read books, chat to the authors, bring you those conversations so you can really get between the covers of fantastic new Australian writing. Today is no exception. First up on the show, I'm speaking with Claire Atkins. She is the author of Nona and Me and her latest is Between Us. This is a heartbreaking and harrowing look at life in Australian detention centres. Anna is an Iranian asylum seeker. Every day she is allowed to go to high school in Darwin, only to return home to her family who do not have that small amount of freedom. Until she meets Jono and life starts to look a little bit different. I loved this book. I'm so excited to share Claire's insights and just this really wonderful narrative about a topic that is not going away in Australia at the moment. Now, later on in the show, I'm going to be speaking with senior editor at Macquarie Dictionary, Victoria Morgan. Macquarie have released their Word of the Year recently. And, well, you'll be surprised to know there is more than one Word of the Year, and we're going to be discussing exactly what is a milkshake duck. That is the show. I love good words. I love good writing, and I'm excited to be bringing it to you. Stay tuned. It is all coming up after this short break. You're on Final Draft on 2SER 107.3.
Located in pristine Hunter Valley bushland, the Gumball Music and Arts Festival is widely regarded as Australia's best boutique camping festival. Held over 3 days at Dashville from Friday, April 27, the Gumball is a music lover's paradise. There's over 30 live acts, on-site camping, markets and loads of all-age activities, perfect for a more chilled festival experience. Check out thegumball.com.au for full lineup and tickets. Tickets on sale now. Dashville sponsors 2SER 107.3.
Good morning. You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. This is Final Draft. It is books, writing and literary culture. And I'm joined in the studio by Claire Atkins. Claire has written for television on a string of popular shows that you probably didn't see because you've been too busy reading books. Her first book was Nona and Me, and today we'll be discussing her latest novel, Between Us. Claire, welcome. Welcome to 2SER. Welcome to Final Draft.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
It's such a good treat having an author here opposite me. I'm really excited because I loved reading Between Us. It's a heartwarming and harrowing insight into the experience of refugees in Australian detention. We have Anahita, yeah.
Yep.
Anna and her family. So they fled Iran after her father was killed and Anna was abused by so-called morality police. And every morning she leaves Wickham Point Detention Centre to attend high school in Darwin, only to return to captivity and her family who don't even have this simple freedom. John O'Doe has his own problems. His mum and sister are in Sydney after his parents split up and his dad just has no idea. But who's this new girl in his science class and why is she looking at Jono? Look, it's a really beautiful setup, very simple. I think a lot of people will recognise the blossoming relationship in this story, but it's also a really tough read. I'm going to admit to tears on occasion. I am not going to say when, though, because that's kind of a bit spoilery. I think people would figure stuff out if I talked about when you actually... Yeah, it's such a moving book. Where did this story come from?
This story came from a whole lot of places, but I think it was born many years ago in my 20s when I was volunteering at Villawood Detention Centre. So I volunteered coordinating kids' activities and I'd go in there and, you know, help organise activities for these kids who had nothing to do. They're just in there. And at the same time, I was really aware that some of my extended Vietnamese family had been detainees in Villawood back earlier in the day. And so just that contrast really stayed with me. And many years later when I moved to Darwin, which was 4 years ago now, I started volunteering in Wickham Point Detention Centre. And that's when I became aware of these teenagers, kids of all ages, who are coming out to school in the mainstream community. And I'm always really attracted to those stories of people who are living in between cultures or in between worlds, and they have to navigate that grey, murky area in between. So it just immediately grabbed me.
Yeah. So there's personal experience there. There's obviously an enormous amount of research that goes into portraying the experience of asylum seekers in detention. Now, without betraying any confidences or even your own writing chrysalis, how do you go about researching a book like Between Us, and how close is a story like Anna's to what is happening to people in our country's detention centres?
Yeah, so the research process was really interesting. My first book, Nona and Me, I wrote while I was living in an Aboriginal community, and everybody was so happy to talk. It was, you know, really great. I'd just wander around and say, hey, do you want to have a chat about this? And we would sit down. This book was completely different. The Border Force Act is in place, which means that people working in detention are not supposed to speak to members of the public or media. Not that I'm media. But so I had a lot of conversations with people where they said, I'll meet you in a cafe, we'll talk, and I don't want my name anywhere near this book. I did heaps of research. I spoke to teachers, students, asylum seekers, refugees, settlement workers, government workers, security guards at various levels of employment. I really did a lot of research for this book and tried to weave it all in there.
You mentioned off air also that you worked with a cultural advisor.
Mm-hmm.
What's that process like, having someone, I guess, editing your book but in a very specific way?
Yeah, so I was really lucky to find an amazing Iranian writer and artist. Her name's Shukufeh Kavani, and she came on board after I had written the first draft, and basically we chatted about, you know, Iran and things, what's happening over there and the realities of life, and some of her stories got woven into the novel, and she also read both drafts of the novel. So she read a solid first draft and gave me feedback to try to make sure it's authentic, and then another second draft just before publication. And it was great. I feel that that's part of my process, really. The first book was written with an Indigenous cultural advisor, and this one with an Iranian cultural advisor, and couldn't really write it without it, to be honest.
Mm. Now, within the story, we have Anna, we have Jono, and you jump between points of view. We also have Jono's dad, Kenny, and I thought he made a really interesting perspective inclusion. The whole book is moving between these three perspectives. What did you want Kenny to bring to the story?
I wanted Kenny to bring that additional knowledge of what life is like in the detention centre, because Anna, when she's at school, she doesn't talk a lot to Jono about what's going on inside. She doesn't want to talk about it. She just wants to feel like a normal teenager. And Kenny brings that perspective of somebody who can see her life and can see his son's life, or what his son reveals of it. So it just brings that extra tension, really. And I was also really interested in the story. I met an amazing guard who talked about the mental impact it had had on them of being a guard, and how that actually took a real toll, and they found themselves hardening and starting to have mental health issues because of dealing with that kind of situation. And so I was interested in exploring that, you know, what is the psychological impact on somebody who is a guard?
It felt like there was a huge tension emerging in Kenny's psyche. And culturally, he had this, I felt like, a really interesting, difficult struggle. He's considered by his sister to be the lucky one. She actually came out from Vietnam on a boat, but he was able to be sponsored out. So he has cultural connections to this a refugee experience, but not having felt it himself, and now he's a guard in that situation. Was that difficult to negotiate, those competing tensions?
Yeah, well, that's what I loved about it, is that I think so often these kind of debates get portrayed as, you know, Anglo versus boat person. And it's just not like that in Australia anymore. We are so multicultural. You know, we're all mixed up, and there's all types of generations and layers of migration who may dislike other layers of migration. And that's what I find really interesting, and that's what I wanted to explore in Kenny, is that kind of contradiction of terms.
Yeah, it recalled me to a book that I read last year, Felicity Castagna's No More Boats, which also deals with this idea of the different stages of migration from around the world that now call Australia home. And I mean, it also got me thinking. So 5 years ago, when I started working on Final Draft, it felt like well-written stories exploring the experience of refugees and asylum seekers that were kind of thin on the ground. And when I look at books like No More Boats, at Between Us that we're discussing now, the anthology They Cannot Take the Sky, which also came out last year, it seems like we have, and kind of sadly, this much-needed genre discussion emerging about this experience. How does that make you feel, and how do you feel coming into this space?
Yeah, I think, you know, writers, we want to tackle the issues that are bothering us and that we want to explore and learn about. And so I think that's the reason behind the emergence of, you know, for example, cli-fi as a genre as well. You know, that's, we want to tackle those tough subjects, but in a really personal way through character. So coming into it, yeah, I was definitely aware. And the thing with a book is it's such a long process. So this took me 3 years to write. And so as I'm writing it, I'm starting to see, you know, other books coming out and I'm like, oh, you know, this is, what's this going to be like when it comes out? But I think everybody tells their unique story and fits their little bit of the puzzle into that that bigger picture of this area. And hopefully it gets people talking.
Yeah, as I said before, it seems strange and also quite tragic that it is almost a genre into itself at the moment in Australian literature. And it's such an important part of the discussion. But again, I feel like you can never help but acknowledge it's a shame that it's a discussion that has to be had.
Absolutely, yeah.
The diversity of characters in Between Us, I'm not going to go through them all, but there's this really broad mix and this complicated interplay, particularly between Kenny and his friends and Anna as she attempts to understand. There's a constant refrain in her mind, is this what Australian kids are like?
Yeah.
What are you hoping to express or say about being Australian in Between Us?
Yeah, diversity is really important to me. So growing up with a Vietnamese dad and an Australian mum, you know, the whole time growing up, I was constantly looking for those reference points in literature and on screen of, you know, where is my experience reflected? And I found it, you know, in places like Looking for Ella Brandy by Melina Marchetta. But it was rare, you know, it wasn't everywhere. And so as a writer, that's one of my absolute passions is bringing that diversity onto the page or onto the screen. And just that's reality. You know, it's not a novelty. It's not something that's weird. It's just all you have to do is walk out on the street and you see all these people from different cultures. And I just wanted to put that into the book.
Is it strange to you that it feels like there might still be a tension around that discussion and it needs to be something that's discussed?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, there have been people who've said, oh, you know, this is great to have a book with three point of view characters who are all people of colour. And to me, I just kind of think, well, I don't find that as remarkable. I wish it wasn't remarkable, you know.
In your conversations, in the research that you did you find that refrain that Anna has, you know, is this what Australian kids are like? Was that something that they were concerned about, that they wanted to figure out, you know, how do I be Australian?
Yeah, I think there was definitely a desire to fit in and just kind of feel normal, you know, and feel part of society. Yeah, definitely.
I kind of love that one of the things that Anna really latches onto are these incredibly kitsch shoelaces with, was it koalas or kangaroos that Kenny was originally wearing? I can't remember.
I've got a mental blank as well now.
Kenny's wearing these Dunlop Volleys, which I literally have no idea whether they're cool anymore or not. I know they used to be cool. And he's got like kind of bright yellow shoelaces. And Anna just loved it. And it was a touchstone for her because she's wearing Asylum Seeker Detention Centre issued clothes, including Dunlop Volleys. And she assumes that maybe she can fit in because she's got these shoes like Kenny's, and she finds it remarkable, and he gifts her a pair of these, which are, you know, they emerge almost emblematic towards the end of the book.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. No, I think I tried to have that in many forms, you know, like even just her wearing the uniform, you know, and that feeling of like, oh my, I'm fit in, I'm in a sea of uniforms and we're all the same, you know, but then she's also got this awareness in the back of her mind, you know, but this uniform was given to me secondhand by a guard, and who else wore it and where are they now? So I definitely kind of tried to weave that into the whole story.
And that wonderful perspective where you're a teenager and nothing is ever right and you just have no sense of yourself. And another scene where she's worried, she's out going on an excursion to the theatre and she's so self-conscious about her clothes, and then you flick immediately to Jono's perspective and what she thinks of as a top that's too small and shaggy. He goes, wow, Anna's wearing this amazing tight top, and he's just being a bit pervy.
yeah, absolutely.
You write a good pervy teenage boy.
Thank you. I'll take that as a compliment.
In the way that you shift between characters, you also have this really interesting style of juxtaposed verse and prose, and it's within sections of the narrative. We start with Jono very much speaking in that voice, but also within a character's point of view. So Anna will also shift into that voice at different points. This is a really... But I have feelings about this, and I think that we don't want to avoid spoilers here, but it struck me that the cropping of lines mirrored emotional styles and cognitive states to do with being a teenager, but also to do with the various stresses that were going on in their individual lives. What were you hoping to convey about experience through these styles?
Yeah, that's very much what I was aiming for. So I really wanted to try to push myself as a writer. I haven't written in verse before, but I just thought there's a real connection between our ability to use language and our emotional states. And when we're in a state of depression, it's easy to shut down and you can't take in as much of the world. And, you know, sentences can become shorter and more clipped. And it's just, yeah, that less observing, more focused on exactly what is happening and kind of like a coping mechanism.
Yeah. I am speaking with Claire Atkins. We are discussing Between Us. It is, if you would like to have your eyes open, if you would like a different perspective on an issue that, look, let's be honest, it's not going away anytime soon. Our current administration don't seem to have any movement on it. The book is Between Us. Look, it's absolutely fantastic. I have loved reading it, Claire, and I've loved having the chance to speak to you about it.
Thank you so much for having me in.
It is time for us to take a short break for some music because, you know, what's radio without a little bit of music before we come back and discover the milkshake duck word of the year from Macquarie Dictionary. This is something new from Emily Warramurra. Look, I fell in love. I had a few tracks that I wanted to play. I don't get to play much music on this show. And as soon as I heard this, I fell in love with it and wanted to share it with you. So this is Emily Warramurra and Nadagu Jainama.
Gulawa enena hangalia oh gulawa memena magara yo 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 yo
Ba-da-da-da-da, ba-da-da-da-da-da, oh.
Good morning. You are tuned in to 2SER. You're listening to Final Draft, and my name is Andrew Popel. Now, as we limp back to work after summer, it seems like a lot of the spotlight goes to the music and the films that we loved from the previous year. But one inevitability of life is that we will talk, and as we do, we endlessly innovate in the ways we use language. Now, Macquarie Dictionary have recently announced their Word of the Year, and if you want your vocab to be 2018 ready, I suggest you tune your dial to 11 and get ready, because I am joined by Victoria Morgan. She is the Senior Editor at Macquarie Dictionary, and we're here to talk Word of the Year. Victoria, thank you so much for joining me.
Good morning, Andrew.
Now, look, let's start. I want to create a little bit of suspense before we get into the words. Can you tell me a little bit why it's important? Why are we recognising and celebrating neologisms?
Language just continually changes. If it didn't change, we would still be speaking old English, medieval English. There's new technology, there's new relationships. Everything just moves on, and language has to follow that to be there to describe things, to use things.
I am curious, though, how does a new word get invented and then come to the attention of the dictionary?
Sometimes it just comes about, someone thinks that there's a word needed for a specific thing, and there's nothing existing that adequately describes it. And in those cases, I mean, lots of people make up words, nonsense words, but it's when other people sort of hear it and then say, oh, that makes sense, or that's a good word, and as a whole people start using it. And then it just becomes adopted naturally into language, and before you know it, people don't realise that it's a new word, it's just part of the existing language. In the medical field, often they're related, or cures, you know, they're you know, Alzheimer's disease, or part of the name itself goes back to the researcher.
So you've just covered the medical field there, but I looked at the long list of words here. There's a lot of variety. Are we talking about academics in the linguistic departments and the hallowed halls of academia who are doing this, or is this something kids are getting up to on the streets?
This is everyone in every area. So a lot of what we've seen now, they're kids. Some of them, it just covers so many different areas.
We're pretty clear here that this is something that is open to anyone. So that word that you've just been using with your friends, with your family, with your partner, may be next year's Word of the Year. But without further ado, let's talk a little bit about it. Now, I want to start with the People's Choice Award. Let's be democratic here. It went to Framily, which is a group of people who are not related by blood, but who constitute an intimate network. This strikes me as a reflection of the ways that our society is both fragmenting, but then also regrouping outside of the typical nuclear units of past generations.
I think that's definitely spot on. So not only do we see sort of, the diversion from what the old nuclear family was, now there's so many adaptations. You've also got friends and family, but you know, living across the other side of the world. So it's not just your pure relationship; it's location, it's everything else. And I think it comes back to the old, you know, you can choose your friends, but you can't choose your family. and so people do. You know, you might not have a biological or a blood relation, you know, a direct relationship. But often these people are closer to you and more important than your actual biological family. We've been monitoring its usage, over the last few years, but it definitely is part of Australian English at the moment, and it's something, especially with blended words or portmanteau words, this is sort of one type of word that does tend to get picked up a little bit quicker than other words because people can see the construction behind it and it makes sense to them.
I love having Framily in my vocabulary now, and I feel like I'm ready to pull it out next time I'm accused of neglecting blood for other people and just sort of say, no, look, I've got it. It's my Framily over here. I have to spend the weekend with them. Now, the committee's choice was Milkshake Duck. Love Milkshake Duck.
This was a little bit more controversial, Milkshake Duck. I had a lot of people scratching their head.
You absolutely do not get it just from passing the two words. So it's a person who is initially viewed positively by the media, but is then discovered to have something questionable about them that leads to a sharp decline in popularity. So obviously, milkshake duck sounds way better than being a Weinstein, but is this a product and perhaps a reflection of this socially uploaded, linked world that we are all consuming almost 24 hours a day?
Unfortunately, I think that it's not a good reflection, but it definitely does embody what we've just seen so much of, especially last year. So the phenomenon itself, I think, is something that everyone was aware of. But the term itself, and the term actually originated, was coined by an Australian. So that was an amazing link back to us. And it was just the cartoonist who'd been watching this all happen and unfold in the news and on, you know, on Twitter. And he just sent out a tweet which he thought would be quite funny, completely unintentional, and this was his little take on sort of that trend. And it just read, "The whole internet loves milkshake duck, a lovely duck that drinks milkshakes. 5 seconds later, we regret to inform you the duck is racist." So it was just a pure social commentary on what had been going on. But then other people saw his tweet, and that went absolutely viral. And the next thing we knew was people were using that term and just saying, "Oh, I hope so-and-so doesn't milkshake duck. You know, someone's doing so well. We love him. We love her. Yeah, I just hope it doesn't end up being a milkshake duck."
So it started off perhaps with some of the trivialities that social media throws up, five-minute wonders, and it's now really engaging in a broader political world where we are obviously putting a lot of scrutiny on the people that we are bringing up to celebrity. I am speaking with Victoria Morgan. She's the senior editor of the Macquarie Dictionary, who have released their Word of the Year recently. We've covered Framley, the People's Choice Award, and Milkshake Duck, the Committee's Choice. Now, my personal favourite from the long list was actually bike sharing. Not because I particularly love it in and of itself. It's, you know, it's a little bit boring, actually. But as I live in the inner west of Sydney, there's a lot of those bike shares floating around Victoria, and they're getting treated horribly.
I know, you can't walk out your door without tripping over one. So the term itself isn't linguistically interesting. You can get a general idea of what it means from the term itself. But it's this whole new concept. It's not just sort of borrowing your neighbour's bike. You have to register, you have to pay. And the fact that we see so many out there means that there's obviously a demand to some degree.
Oh, look, I like bike sharing because I think it's primed to become part of perhaps a new portmanteau for 2018, something that encompasses the disdain and violence that is seeing bright yellow and red cycles stacked in unruly piles and hanging from trees. So, look, what I want to propose to you, I'm going straight to the top, I'm getting in early. for 2018, the backfire economy... The backfire economy. That's when the share economy goes horribly wrong, and ends up hanging from a tree. I also want to try maybe installation art sharing, for when for when those bikes just seem to become like a 5 minute sculpture on the
second life of the bike.
Absolutely. So, yeah, look, you heard it here first on 2SER. If backfire economy and installation art sharing make it big in 2018, Victoria, thanks so much for helping to announce these new words and helping just expand the vocabulary of all of us.
It's not too late to kickstart your new career in communications, be it journalism, creative writing or communication management. We're still accepting postgrad applications at UTS to start in March. Search UTS Communications today. UTS School of Communications sponsors 2SER.
You are tuned into 2SER 107.3. I'm Andrew Popel, and Final Draft is almost over. It's been exciting bringing you new books. Thank you so much to Claire Atkins for sharing between us, to Victoria Morgan for telling us exactly who the Framley are and what a milkshake duck does. Look, I'm back next week. The Australian Classics Book Club is returning. We're going to be discussing Death in Brunswick from Boyd Oxlade. Now, the Vultures are coming up next. Stay tuned for their unique blend of comedy, culture, and news. For now, I'm going to say bye and see you next week with more books.